This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, buddy. Hour 4, G-Bag Nation here on 105.3. The Fan Expressway is coming up in 20 minutes. Rangers baseball at 6:30. They're going to take on the Royals exhibition action. DeGrom pitching tomorrow. It should be fun. Okay, here on your home of the Rangers, we're fired up for a return to glory 2025. Anthony Davis is playing tonight for the Mavs. We'll have more on that coming up in the Expressway at 5:20. And then I'm going to attempt LA Live at 5:40. I think we'll call it GD Live, you know? It's got a nice ring to it. GD Live, first ever. Yeah, GD Live 540. You know, try to pull it off in Lucius fashion as much as I'm capable of.
Are you zooming enough?
Am I zooming?
Right, because Lucius is always zooming.
Oh, that's right, he's always zooming. I don't know if I'm zooming. I do have an extra Celsius over here. Maybe I should crack it.
You got to get in the right mindset.
I'm zooming and grooving.
Yeah.
Some CBD.
That's right.
Okay.
Of course, you'll be black tomorrow.
Well, we'll see how it goes. You know, maybe I will, maybe I won't. Maybe we'll need somebody else to be the substitute LA tomorrow.
You know what? I'm watching this Cam Ward is throwing right now in the pro day.
Ooh.
Lot of from underneath center. These NFL coaches and scouts are like, listen, if you're going to do this workout, make sure it's underneath center. Let's see the dropbacks. Let's see the footwork. Let's see all that. And how ready he might be for this, or if this could be something difficult for him to pick up. But looks like he's doing okay so far with the throws and stuff, but a lot of from underneath center to try and get him, see how he adapts to that.
Well, it is 5:00 here on a Monday. It's quitting time. Crack him if you got him. Here's the Chief with football's finest.
Okay, so we know Stephon Diggs went to New England, and they just met, wanted to kick the tires on him and get an update on where he was physically toward the ACL last season. Apparently, he's ahead of schedule, running full speed. I've seen some videos of him doing some workouts, single leg, like squat kind of lunge stuff, Bulgarian style perhaps, and he's getting it done. So Stephon Diggs seems to be attacking the rehab in a way that's going to set him up for potential success. We'll see if New England strikes at him. Maybe it's a post-draft situation like it oftentimes is for a lot of veterans, and just see where the chips fall after the draft, who didn't get the receiver they wanted, boom, go get a Diggs. But that's encouraging, the fact that he is ahead of schedule, and I wonder how interested the Cowboys might be at the right price, of course.
Yeah, I would think right price for the Cowboys has to be under 10 mil. I don't know how far you have to go underneath that. He's going to be 32 years old in November. You know, I would say at this point, best days are behind him by quite a bit. But Stephon Diggs is still capable of like an 1,200 yard season, isn't he?
I would put that probably, I'd probably cap it there.
Okay.
Unless he was dealing with an incredible quarterback situation in the right setting, I think there is an opportunity for that probably. But as a wide receiver number 2, 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns, I think it's still doable.
Played in 8 games last year, 500 yards, 10.6 per catch. He might have fallen off.
Well, that offensive line, they were not pushing the ball. Oh, I mean, I say that. Nico Collins was definitely getting the ball pushed down the field to him. But that was, I don't know about the fit. It's hard to know. With a weird Texans offense last year, OC's getting fired, first 8 games in a new system, new team, new quarterback, new role. It's hard to judge that in a huge way. But, yeah, I think that as a wide receiver, too, he can still find some success. Deion Sanders. Well, first, let me start with what Ian Rappaport said today. He says, I think we're going to see 3 quarterbacks drafted in the top 15. We're 1 month away from round 1 of the NFL draft. Very exciting time. And he says, 3 quarterbacks, Ian Rappaport, three quarterbacks drafted in the top 15. But he says where Shedeur Sanders goes is the biggest draft question mark that I can remember in a very long time. Which is kind of funny to me because if you know you're going to have three quarterbacks go in the top 15, then you know Shedeur Sanders is going to be one of those guys.
Yes.
So you know he's going to go in the top 15. I guess he's just saying he could go two overall or he could go 15th, I guess.
Yeah, that's the question. And here's the guy that started off as the potential the first overall pick, you know, when we started this journey. And then the season wore along, and then you started getting the evaluations. You started to hear the stuff about, you know, Sanders. Ward played at a very, very high level at Miami. Jackson Dart from Ole Miss looks very pro-ready, what I've seen.
Yeah, I'm assuming that's the third guy.
The third guy. Yeah, or there might be some people, and I'm not going to say, like, say Milrow. I know the Steelers had brought him in for a visit. I don't see Milrow, of course, as a first-round quarterback, but, man, someone might fall in love with him and go earlier than I would take him, but maybe a second-round type guy there.
Deion Sanders was asked where he believes Shedeur will be drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And the quote was, "Let's hope it's New York," which would put him third overall in the draft.
Right.
If things remain the same,
mm-hmm.
which means no thank you, Cleveland.
Yeah, you would not want Cleveland. I think New York has some relatively recent history of being successful, but I'd be terrified of that front office's decision making, really, post, Eli, really, really, last 15 years.
There's a shot. And he's probably thinking this. I mean, he's trying to think of maybe New York with more of the stable of the ownership and stuff like that. And I mean stable as far as how the owner gets involved or not gets involved and stuff like that. But both Cleveland and the Giants, general managers, coaches, those guys are both sets are under fire right now.
Yeah, New York's not much better off than Cleveland in a football standpoint.
There's
right
not
now.
Much stability. But between two of those, when it comes to,
I think some of that's market. You know, he like Shedeur Sanders in New York as opposed to Cleveland.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a huge win. You're going to a great city with an incredible opportunity for you to, you know, get advertising deals on.
Yeah,
this, you know, it would be if things go well for you in New York, it can get no better.
And I'm sure Deion's also thinking, if I end up getting called up to the bigs and I'm gonna go coach Shedeur somewhere, I'd rather do it in New York than in Cleveland.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have to connect those dots to some extent.
Sure.
Like, it's only a matter of time before those things start taking place, unless Shedeur is just a total flop.
And Dayball's on the hot seat, right?
Yeah,
that's
this
what
could
I'm
be,
saying.
This could be one and done. And next season, we could be talking about Coach Prime in New York with, I mean, you have Deion and his son in New York in this division.
Yeah. It's made for TV.
It's huge. The Colts have interest in Trey Hendrickson, Bengals pass rusher. He's threatening to hold out for the entire season if he can't get a deal done. Rappaport says the Bengals are trying to not let him leave the building, and they're working to keep him. So we'll continue to monitor that.
Sounds like he's winning the negotiation.
Yeah, sounds like it, dude. Yeah. I mean, the Bengals have been opening up the checkbook a little bit. Speaking of the Colts, by the way, I saw Anthony Richardson is now working with the same quarterback coach who helped get Josh Allen into form.
Okay.
From an accuracy standpoint, his throwing coach, Anthony Richardson of the Colts, is now doing that because his accuracy is just an unmitigated disaster. I saw he's been under 55% completion percentage throughout his entire football playing career, high school included.
It's tough. There's a lot to love. That touchdown he scored last year where he ran for like 40 yards, you can see why you would make the pick. I think it's probably time to cut bait on that. I thought you were going to say he's now working with the tight ends.
Yeah. yeah. That's probably his transition. If he's going to switch positions, I would think tight end, he's an absolute physical specimen. He cannot throw to save his life in terms of accuracy. But if you're going to get with a throwing coach to improve the accuracy, Josh Allen, whoever that guy is for Josh Allen, that's the guy you want to saddle up with, right? I mean, the Josh Allen turn has been unbelievable.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of people that had a hand in that. Ken Dorsey.
Yeah. He was his QB coach in Buffalo. Yeah. So certainly
Ken Dorsey's
some credit
here
there.
Now.
Yeah, Ken Dorsey is here now.
So hopefully, I mean, they obviously didn't feel like he could do something with Trey Lance, but that next backup that comes in, young guy, who's that going to be? Ken Dorsey hopefully has the understanding to get that thing done. Now, the wide receivers, I wanted to get to Matthew Golden here in this draft, but first I wanted to tee up. You had the playmaker Michael Irvin on with Kay Adams, and she asked him, I guess his two favorites in this draft are Ashton Jeanty, mm-hmm. and then in terms like realistic for the Cowboys, he likes Matthew Golden.
Right.
Texas wide receiver. Here he is, either or, Jeanty or Golden, Cowboys at 12, playmaker, what say you?
And that's a great question. And if both are on the board, I got to go Jeanty. Because now I'm coming back to what I know. And we all fall back on what we know best. And what I know best is that triplet formation, winning game. I know when Emmitt came, the difference he made. We had the same offensive line prior to him getting here. But when he got here, all of a sudden, they became the best offensive line ever. That's because Emmitt was the best running back ever. You see what I mean? And he made a difference. Let's look at what Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry did for those squads that they played on this year. So, you get a chance to get a Jeanty and have that kind of production that he's had. Yeah, you take him.
No, I don't think you're going to have any qualms about that. And honestly, I don't know anybody in the world that would choose Golden over Jeanty. If you're just going player for player right there. So
yeah.
I totally get what he's saying. And the more I see on Matthew Golden, I thought it was interesting, Marcus Mosher. I'm bringing this up because Walchuk's not here today. I never bring up Mosher if Walchuk's in the building.
It anchors him.
It really does. But he notes that there have been 28 wide receivers drafted in the first round since 2020. None of them averaged fewer yards per game than Matthew Golden in their best season. Like, Matthew Golden's best season is under 62 yards a game. So when you look at just production factor, it's not quite there when you juxtapose it with the other first round picks over the last 5 years.
In the big games, though, those playoff games and stuff like that, he was such a huge player. It's a lot like watching Will Howard play quarterback at Ohio State. Just the fact that you're just put on this huge stage and you're able to make play after play after play against outstanding competition with so much on the line.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the thing Texas has got, if you think about though, with all the weapons that they have, you know, that
they were spreading the wealth.
Yeah, I mean, Ohio State's the same way. When there's people that like, you know, that like Junkins over Henderson, the running backs and stuff like that. And, you know, everybody gets an opportunity there. You know, so mm-hmm. I think the thing with Golden, I think it's going to come down to if the Cowboys are going to take a receiver and it's McMillan and Golden. I think those are the two guys that they're going to, and they're going to have to make a decision on that. I think they really do like Golden a lot.
I heard Bobby saying like the route running stuff with Golden leaves a lot to be desired.
His ability to make plays down the field, he finds ways to get open. You can legitimately see the speed. You can see the quickness. You know, Texas routes are not precise. A lot of screens, a lot of underneath stuff. It's not downfield and, like double move, nod, shake. It's not that. It's a vertical game. It's a screen game. It's a crossing game. There's not a lot of route running that you see in that.
Gotcha. Okay.
With the scheme. I mean, you see a lot of, for sure.
I mean, Quinn Ewers is the guy that's not pushing the ball down the field. Absolutely. I don't know how much of that is Ewers, how much is that is Sark, but it's certainly their offense.
Yep.
But you would go Ted in that situation, right?
I had McMillan. Ted over him, yeah.
At 12.
Yeah.
The other thing of note is just seeing the consensus big board, so to speak, on certain players in the North Carolina running back Omarion Hampton, mm-hmm. who has been mocked to the Cowboys a decent amount over the last couple of weeks. Mel Kiper, Daniel Jeremiah. When you go like Kiper, Jeremiah, Field Yates, Dane Brugler, Mike Renner, like five big dogs in the world of NFL draft media scouting. You have Kiper with him at 14 overall. And same with Daniel Jeremiah, looking at the Carolina running back as the 14th best player. But Field Yates looks at him as the 26th best, Dane Brugler as the 36th best, and Mike Renner as the 65th best.
Wow.
So, like, the range on this guy, where there's potential he's drafted at 12, And if you ask Dane Brugler, it shouldn't be until the second round. End of the second round.
Yeah, that's tough, and I think that's what Brian's been telling us about, like the difference between player 12 and 50 is just in the eye of the beholder.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you got to be right here. You know, you got to believe that your scouts are going to be able to identify who the right players are better.
Mm-hmm.
For me and the Cowboys, it kind of depends on what position they're at. You know, I think they've had some positions just dialed over the years, and others make you, you know, kind of pucker up.
Speaking of positions that might make you pucker up, Waldchuk at Zero's wedding on Saturday, he had Brad Sham to his left, Babe Laufenberg to his right.
Wow.
It was a Waldchuk sandwich with Brad and Babe as the buns.
Good Lord, that's a whole lot of meat.
I mean, what an experience. And it was so windy, and we were sitting right next to the last table to get called for the food. So we were just kind of right there, bottom of the barrel.
What were you getting? You were getting called like tables, like you were in elementary lunch?
Yeah. Okay. That's right. It was like, by table, you can now go get in line and be served what was a delicious meal.
It
was
Blue Mason, well organized.
Yeah. Very well organized. We just had to bring it up the caboose, which was fine because at that point, then the quantity factor, they were like, yeah, you can have as much as you want.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, because everybody's now got a plate.
But you like, you were hovering right there by the line, right?
It wasn't a hover. It was just whenever it was my turn, I spoke up immediately to the guy and was like, hey, could we kind of just double up on all this?
Yeah.
Your single scoop draft. Everything. Exactly. Exactly. So you just pile up assets at the end. That's what I did. Undrafted free agents of rice and chicken and salmon and cornbread. That was really on point. So all that was great. But Waldchuk was in the Brad and Babe spin cycle.
Nothing beats a good cornbread, man. I mean, you can mess it up by drying it out easily.
Right.
Cook it.
Right.
Oh, you nail it.
Easily,
you give me a pat of butter and a little honey. Heaven.
It was probably, I would call that, the star of the show. Even more than the salmon, which was really on point. That cornbread stuff was out of this world.
Hmm. A cornbread star of the show.
I think Brad Sham would agree.
All right.
Oh.
He helped himself.
He was enjoying it. I mean, we all were. It was a damn good time.
Well, congrats to Zero and all the party goers that got to enjoy his nuptials over the weekend. A fan legend from his days here.
No doubt. Now he's on a beach somewhere.
Living it up. All right. Thank you, Chief. Football's finest is in the books. Let's hit the expressway. There's big news on the Mavs, and we'll get that and more coming up for you next year. It's the G-Bag Nation, the fan. Brian, what's so funny over there?
No, it's just GD Live.
Okay. All right. I'll tell you what's not funny. Mavs playing tonight. Anthony Davis is returning. Maybe the intimidation of Nick Claxton in the front court. He's probably going to go for a 30-20 night tonight against this Mavs front court. Brought him back. But I do feel like his defense and rebounding is going to give this team a lift they need to probably outplay the Suns here down the stretch. The Suns have a very difficult schedule. The Mavs schedule not as difficult. So I think they're going to be a play-in team now that they're actually doing this. I guess my question for you guys, if Davis gets hurt again, would it become a fireable offense? Is that our out for Nico as much as we'd hate to see it?
Ooh, I mean, in my mind, he's already done a fireable offense, but in Dumont's mind, I guess, is the one that would be making that decision. And I don't know. I think at least the way it's felt is he's been completely on board with this, and he would just chalk it up to poor injury luck. All of our guys are getting injured. Yeah. Whatever. I don't know.
Just the way the season
mind,
is. Yeah.
In his mind, hey, just wait, because we're about to get Luka injured again, too. You know, I don't – maybe if it was some sort of catastrophic – situation and he's gonna tears his ACL or something like Kyrie did and it's out for the year and then you're like, oh my gosh, this is completely nuked. But I feel like Dumont's pretty on board.
Yeah, I want to hope that he can start to get headed down that path, Brian. Like,
yeah,
at one point there was no way he would have traded Luka, you know,
right?
And then in game three last year against Boston, maybe that was the spark of the idea. The calf in training camp pushed him a little bit farther down that path, and then the calf at Christmas made it final, right? Yeah. The three steps to Dumont wanting to trade Luka. What are the three steps for him wanting to fire Nico? Maybe this could be. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm reaching, looking for a silver lining on this story, but...
You just never know, but the thing about it is, who's telling Patrick Dumont what to do? That's in the organization. That's who you have to, if you're Nico, that's how you have to worry about, you know. I don't think Patrick Dumont is smart enough basketball smart enough to like say, okay, I got to get rid of my general manager here.
Yeah.
He's going to have somebody tell him, like, listen, you know.
Yeah.
You're,
because he's in over his skis. He's never done anything like this before.
Yeah. And
maybe Jeannie Buss could call him and say, hey, listen, we really robbed you on that trade. And we don't want you to do for those for any of our competitors.
To me, that's kind of where I think that I don't think he'll fire Nico just on his own.
Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah.
I think he's going to have somebody in the organization or somebody in the NBA is going to have to tell them or tell him, listen, your guy did you absolutely wrong and you need to do something about it.
Yeah.
He's not going to go in there and close the door with Nico and say, hey, you're fired. And Nico's going to go, okay, why are we doing this?
He's years away from knowing enough about pro basketball to realize that that needs to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. If he ever gets there. Yeah. Okay. As far as if you bring Lively and Gafford back along with Anthony Davis before these playoffs start, who could this Mavs team seriously beat? OKC, probably not. I don't think you could get into your offensive sets against them. They're too good defensively. The Rockets, yes. The Nuggets, maybe. The Lakers, without a front court player at all, will get out-rebounded by double-digit boards in that series. The Mavs will out-rebound them by double digits. I don't know. I think the Lakers' defense has actually proven to be pretty dang good on the perimeter. They would probably get the best of you. But I think that would be an interesting series. Grizzlies, I think you could beat. Golden State Warriors. I don't know. Kevon Looney, Draymond Green, they would probably neutralize your front court advantage along with Kuminga pretty good. T-Wolves, I don't know. Clippers, maybe. But they're the 8 seed right now. Currently, Mavs are tied with the Suns at 34-37. And, I think you probably pick them to win a play-in game right now against Sacramento.
They feel like that they could, the Rockets, and because I asked this question, and they feel like the Rockets and the Nuggets would get, they would be, even without a point guard, that they would have an opportunity to beat those guys. I think everybody else they're kind of worried about.
Well, I mean, congrats to Spencer Dinwiddie, Jaden Hardy, Dante Exum for figuring out a way to create offense, and how much they've scored. But as you guys said earlier in the show, up until now, all we can see is that they're capable of doing that against bad defenses.
Exactly. Now you go through, and I don't think this version of the Mavs is really competing with any of these Western Conference teams that are up there in the top seven, really. But it does just go to show how open everything is.
Yeah.
And the landscape is right there for you for the taking. If you still had your team intact, the West was wide open. And the track record that the Mavs have had versus the Thunder, which is obviously the big boy in the West right now, speaks for itself. The Mavs matched up incredibly well against them. And everybody else, so beatable. Mavs went to the finals. They were the 5 seed last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There is totally a world where, man, you could run through and get to the Western Conference Finals and like your chances versus a team like the Thunder just because you've kind of had their number.
Yeah, and I can imagine.
That's what makes it so much more frustrating.
In Nico's mind, with his eco working overdrive, he's probably thinking, we can win this, and I'm going to tell everybody to kiss my ass.
Yeah, you know,
that's probably what's going on in his mind because he doesn't have the experience or maybe the ego's hijacking him right now, but he probably just doesn't have the experience to know when to wave the white flag. Like I'm watching this great show. I think it's on Amazon Prime. I don't know. It's one of these streaming spots called Rogue Heroes.
Okay.
It's about the early days of the SAS, which was like an English special forces type of operation. And they birthed in World War II in the African theater as they were fighting for Cairo and stuff like this. Well, you know, one of the themes of World War II is these officers or NCOs that, you know, were out there for the glory, right? And they would continue to charge into a battle when they should have cut bait and ran. You need to get home, right, and reorganize, come up with a better plan. But I think right now, Nico's like a couple of days into a battle that you're obviously getting your ass kicked in. You need to retreat. You need to consolidate your resources. And he's like, no, we can get to, Munich or whatever.
He's striding.
We're going all the way. You know, you guys just don't see my vision.
By the way, that show, 8.2 out of 10 on IMDb, 80% TV Guide, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. 90% nice. Like that show.
Nice, dude. I mean, I wouldn't say it's a perfect show or one of my favorites, but it checks all the boxes.
Right.
You know, you get some World War II going on. You get some crazy personalities. Like, the thing about the SAS is they tried to pick dudes who didn't follow the rules, who you could just drop off in a remote location and say, go kill them. Don't tell us anything about it. Come home when you're done.
Oh, you know? You got the 1% of screw loose but skilled.
Yes. I have a screw loose, but I have a very special set of skills that I use to kill people. So if you want to go ahead and turn me loose, I can do that for you.
Hey,
boss.
I'm sold on this show, bro.
Yeah, I mean, it's the perfect premise for all sorts of craziness, because nothing's really out of bounds once you've established that. And it pays off well. We're through season one, just started season two. What the Mavs need, though, is great leadership from ownership. And I don't think they got that very much from Mark Cuban. But damn it, it's a lot better than DeMont. Cut 19 for Mark Cuban did a podcast over the weekend with Tom Segura. What are you still in charge of? Here's Cubes.
What part of basketball do you control and what do you not
I don't
control?
Anymore. And so, I haven't for a while.
So you relinquished
kinda,
all of it.
I didn't relinquish. They kind of
muscled it out of you.
Yeah, I wouldn't say muscled, but, you know, the majority owner, Patrick DuMont, decided that, you know, he was comfortable with Nico Harrison, the general manager, and the team he had put together, which is his choice.
His choice.
I mean, and you can't totally argue with him because, you know, we went to the finals.
Yes.
You know? Now, I could tell you, you know, yeah, it was his choice, and he made his choice, and so I'm just a fan now.
You were in the position of having some...
When I originally sold the team, that originally was the conversation. That originally what was supposed to happen.
Okay.
And then over time, and initially it was, you know, and then over time, it was like, okay, and Nico, we trust, and so here we are.
Yeah, that's tough. You know, I think you probably wanted to get that in writing, but there's really nothing you can do once the governor of the team decides, I want to play with the toy. You know, and that's why when he sold the team and there was that announcement that he was going to be the governor indefinitely, I was like, this isn't going to happen. This just isn't, you know, it's too much fun.
And especially when it's just a handshake.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, they didn't actually make this contractual.
Yeah. Wish the guy would have followed up when he says there's stuff I could tell you.
Right.
You know, I wish he would have said, like what?
To be fair, this is Tom Segura, the comedian who probably has no idea what he's even asking him.
Oh, okay.
I love Tom Segura, but
yeah, I just wish Tom would have said, "Well, like what? What can you tell us? What do you keep in here?
Who do we need on this? Yeah,
and maybe he could have gone into like some of the stuff like with him and maybe him and Nico, you know.
We need like Bob Lee on the scene, just like thoroughbred journalist, Jeremy Schapp.
You need somebody to follow up.
Yeah, outside the lines, Bob Lee.
He was wanting to tell you what, and then we just didn't get the follow-up there.
Mike Lupica would have been all over his ass about that.
Yeah. You're damn right. Roy Firestone would have not let that moment pass.
Am I right about that, though?
Your dead ball's on right.
Yeah, because to me, I would have like, whoa, wait a minute, there's more to this? Like, you're no longer in a basketball position because why?
I tell you what you heard, Brian, is you heard Mark Cuban wants to talk about it.
He absolutely does want to talk about it, you know?
And I think eventually there will be an interviewer with him where that follow-up will be asked. And we look forward to that day. But damn it, those two are related, you know? DuMont thought, sure, I'll make you governor. But as soon as he got the whiff of it, his ego was like, yes, I want to be in charge of this show.
Yeah.
And then, I think that goes to... The decision to ultimately let Luka go. It's just too fun to get in there and roll the dice and be changing things out. And it's nowhere for an inexperienced owner to be without a very heavy-handed consultant of some sort. Congrats to Texas. They got their guy. They got the coach that knocked him out. Xavier Sean Miller hired as the Longhorns' new men's basketball coach today. That's how you do it right there. He did spend 12 years at Arizona following Lute Olson, which is not easy to
not
do
easy
following
to
a
do.
Legend like that, but he did a hell of a job. He was the subject of a college basketball corruption investigation in 2017, was ultimately fired in 2021. I don't know, was he paying players, something like that?
Probably was.
He probably just ahead of his time a little bit.
Yeah.
And he was only in his second year at Xavier. They had just gone 22-12, and you could see the culture that he built in that loss to the Longhorns, or that win over the Longhorns last week.
He's
good hire.
He's changed his sideline attire. I think the post-COVID stuff has these coaches being a little bit more like athleisure on the sidelines, because he used to be a surefire, and plenty of the NCAA coaches, the old school guys, are still wearing suits and stuff, but Sean Miller was known for being the sweatiest coach in America.
Yeah.
Even like he jumped Bruce Pearl for this particular record. And he would always wear the white shirt, and he would take the jacket off at some point during the game, and he was just completely soaked. You could see through his shirt.
No t-shirt.
It was stuck to him. No t-shirt, no undershirt in any way. But now he's pivoted to like the quarter zip or whatever.
I love it, man. I do like going to this athleisure look. I mean, that's a big move. I think most people should do it.
Yes.
Just go. Let's make that the new suit.
Especially with the shoes. Like, they were wearing like actual dress shoes as well on the sidelines. You're standing up for four quarters. That can't be good for the back.
Fashions evolve very well. I've been studying the process of becoming more calm as a coach. It's crazy to watch these dudes that fully embrace the intensity. They're like, nope, this is going to be 1,000 miles an hour for the next 2 hours, and I'm just going to be an impulsive whim after impulsive whim on shouting at my players and gesticulating and jumping up and down. It's an incredible journey. Yes, it is. And I think at times you can see that on his face. You could see that last week as they came back from that and then held a lead, and they were kind of nail biting until they managed to pull away late. You can see the anxiety on his face as he's going through it.
So what have you learned from the book? Are you Woosawing on the sidelines? You closing your eyes? Are you picturing your happy place, Happy Gilmore style?
You know, I think the first thing I learned about it was just a reminder that if you want to accomplish anything, the first thing is being aware of it, you know, being aware and being willing to confront. That wasn't ideal, right? And giving yourself a score afterwards, you know. But yes, a lot of it for me comes back to breathing, you know, just doing the woosaw and trying to, you know, lock in as good as possible there. Texas Rangers are in action tonight. The pregame underway in less than an hour at 6:30. I heard DeGrom's appearance is going to be tomorrow in the 135 game. Tonight you'll get some Malley. A lot of big decisions approaching for this front office, though, including Evan Carter from postseason hero and legend to a bubble for the opening day roster right now after the back injury. That's what we are waiting on. Rangers leadership talking about, look, you know, he had a great couple of months, but he missed a lot of time with injury. Might need time to play himself back into that kind of a guy before he is big league ready again. But Santu joined us an hour and a half ago, said, you know, nothing's been decided, and he felt like Evan Carter is going to be on the big league team. And then that was surprising to me. I don't think that is what championship teams should be doing. As amazing as it was, as much as we believe in the guy, we're excited about the guy, you know, the proof's in the pudding now. Between last year and this spring training, guy can't play at a big league level right now. Dane Dunning going through waivers, possibly. Rangers trying to get out of the $2.6 million obligation they have on him. And that's another one. That's just wild. That's money related, though. But big league teams have an opportunity to get a guy who started quite a few games for $2.6 million.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
You got to think there's enough teams that need some pitching that are willing to pay that. But also, when Mike Maddux and Chris Young are done with you, I think that says a lot.
It does. It says an awful lot, you know, because they got to be looking at that value, too. Like, isn't there other ways we could get, you know, but they probably tried to trade him, couldn't get anything, you know. So the thing with Dunning is he got incredible results there for a period of time. But the analytics, the spin rates and everything, the way that they look at how pitchers are doing to predict and model what should happen in the future just doesn't generate a lot of confidence in them. Dallas Stars are back in action tonight. They're going to host Minnesota coming up at 7:00. Stars coming off a nail biter win against Philadelphia on Saturday. 3-2 was the final. Would you say four straight overtime games, Brian?
Four straight. Yeah.
They're 2-2 in those contests, not scoring enough to put teams away at all. And that would have been a bad loss. Philadelphia, I think they've won one out of their last 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking for signs here with about 10 games to go. The Stars are getting everything figured out. Okay, LA Live's coming up here in just a second, Ross. I look up at the clock and I realize I have more than enough time to get in 60 seconds on soccer.
Yeah.
USA down bad, as if last week wasn't bad enough, losing to Panama 1-0. Then they dropped 2-1 to Canada yesterday in the third place match, Brian.
Yeah. Wake me up when we really are serious about playing soccer or get better players. How about that?
But both losses took place at SoFi Stadium,
yeah,
where the U.S. plays its World Cup opener,
yeah,
June 12, 2026.
I have absolutely no confidence that we are going to get out of our round.
You probably shouldn't, that they'll get out of group play.
I have
they
none.
Couldn't get Pulisic the ball.
Yep.
They limited attack significantly. Coach Pochettino, I think you'll like this, Brian. He says, it's better to lose now because we have time.
No.
If we will be in this situation in 1 year, for sure, I'll tell you, Houston, we have a problem.
Yeah.
But he says, we're all disappointed. The fans need to feel disappointment. We didn't win, but I'm not going to allow us to feel pessimistic because I think we have good players.
If you're a fan of U.S. men's soccer, you're constantly disappointed. So we live in that, Coach. Yeah. We live in a disappointed state. With as close as we are to the World Cup, I do not feel any better about our side.
Well, maybe they'll do better in June when they face Turkey and Switzerland in a pair of friendlies before the start of the Gold Cup.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's...
Yeah. Wake me up.
Yeah, I know, buddy. I'll let you know.
I know. I'm just saying, though, I mean, we seem to spend so much effort and time on our team, and we just cannot put things together. The women, give them a lot of credit. They seem to play very well together as a team. They're connected. They know how to play hard for each other. There's so many questions about the men's side, you know, and we just haven't gotten any better. Just have not gotten better.
I think we've invested
blame it on
a lot.
The manager. Every
we year. Have good players in Europe playing higher levels than they ever have before. But you're right. As a team, we're not better.
We don't play better.
It feels like we're like a top 20 team in the world, and I'm waiting to be like a legitimate top 10
like an
team.
All-star team.
Yeah.
There's no cohesion with the group, and there's always questions about this.
As I promised, it is time now, as it is every night of this time, for an edition of LA Live, but we don't have Lucius, so let's do GD Live.
All right, you squares.
Fire up this funk and let's have a toe.
All righty, yes, sir. It is Gavin Dawson in for Lucius Alexander on this, what are we looking at here, 24th day of March?
Yes.
2025.
There you go.
Okay. I am Gavin Dawson from the G-Bag Nation, and I'm going to do my best, to deliver this LA Live for you as I know you would prefer it.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are going to start this evening, gentlemen, with a story of some sports toxicity. How about this? It's not a toxic Tuesday.
Not a toxic Tuesday.
But we do have a 17-year-old Russian tennis star. You see her act over the weekend?
Did she? Were they play? Oh, wait. I saw the Ukraine tennis player was playing the Russian tennis player?
This was America versus Russia,
okay.
Actually.
Okay.
Mira Andreeva accuses American Amanda Anisimova of gamesmanship for addressing her blister during a game. Anisimova trolled her after the match by flipping her the bird.
Whoa.
Look at this. Match went the distance. The American pulls off the upset, ended Andreeva's beyond impressive 13-match winning streak. But the controversy began as Anisimova took a medical timeout briefly in the third set at 3-1, 40-40. Mm-hmm. On Andreeva's serve, the Russian did not take too kindly to the stoppage, implying Anisimova was deploying a bit of gamesmanship in a way of icing her during a crucial point in the match. Said, I got a blister on my finger. It looked pretty legit to me, guys. You had the skin flap pulled up, a telltale sign of a blister that has popped.
You can't fake
and
that.
And it's extremely painful. Yeah.
And what is she accusing her of? Just simply gamesmanship?
Yeah.
Of course. Welcome to sports. You're dang right. If you can't expect some gamesmanship and trying to win in the margins in every way possible, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we called a timeout to ice the kicker.
Yeah.
I did see
over
the weekend, a Ukrainian tennis player, they were playing in Miami, I believe. She was playing a Russian tennis player, and she, for a match point, she served underhand and got an ace.
No way.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
That's like, instead of like, she's just going to did the underhand serve. got the ace, and yeah, so the Ukraine tennis player beat the Russian tennis player.
Getting kind of sassy there. That's a pretty good troll move there at the end. Isn't that showing somebody up?
I think that's definitely showing somebody up.
It's what I like about these individual sports. You don't have like a team or a city to worry about, so you can just be as disrespectful as possible.
Yeah. That's right.
You're your own boss.
Exactly. You're your own brand, however you want to do it. You don't have to worry about the man next to you.
Yeah.
The man to your right, the man to your left.
And just if
about
sponsors the man in the don't middle. Like you, fine. Right? You're not ticking off any salespeople, any CEOs, any GMs. I'm just out here being me, man.
I just saw the clip. Free. It's hilarious, dude.
All right. Tiger Woods, speaking of give me a break.
What are we doing here, huh?
He tweets, love is in the air and life is better with you by my side.
Give me privacy.
We look forward to our journey through life together. At this time, we would appreciate privacy for all those close to our hearts. He's got some new celebrity girlfriend or something like that. I guess it's Don Trump's Jr.'s ex.
Yeah, yes, dude. Okay, she's got quite the... She's got quite the resume.
I think that's how he likes them.
When it comes to the dating.
Yeah, very experienced.
She dated, according to Wikipedia, she at one point dated local street gangster Valentin Rivera, a member of the violent gang Latin Kings.
Should have some pretty good stories for, well, that'll liven up dinner time.
Then she linked up with Leonardo DiCaprio before she turned 25, of course.
Hmm.
Next thing you know, she's dating a Saudi prince for 3 years before she moved on to marrying Donald Trump Jr. And I guess that was the last one until now, Tiger Woods.
Man, she's got a thing for gangsters, I guess. And then there's Tiger Woods.
He hard launched her and then he said, please respect our privacy.
That is rich.
It's like, hey, here it is, but don't talk about it. Don't be about it. In fact, don't even like this post. Just scroll right past it, please. Privacy.
I guess he wanted to acknowledge something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just, it was really cheesy and corny, if you ask me. That was my main thing. It kind of gave me the ick.
Yeah. Well, that's been his, isn't that, like, he's hanging out with, aren't there stories about him out with the other superstars, and he just doesn't quite vibe when he's out with the ladies?
Yeah.
Derek Jeter's cleaning up, and the other stars, and there's Tiger Woods just
He's always paid for it.
Is that right?
Yeah. Tiger's always paid for it.
It's well documented.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's kind of why he's probably not very comfortable doing what he's done.
He's just been all golf all the time since day one.
He's kind of like it's this whole idea of keeping things private. He posted that he's got 6.4 million followers on X, and he's asking for privacy. Okay, what are you doing then, bro?
Yeah,
but he's never. I mean, he's always had to pay for it. So he kind of like that's kind of an awkward thing for him to have some. What do you say, the Riz?
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't have the Riz. He doesn't know how to frame it. No, you're right.
Yeah.
I think that is pretty ballsy to be dating somebody with such powerful men on her resume. You know, like any one of these guys could just decide that he was forever in love with this woman. And you like the street gangster, the Saudis, the Trumps, these are the most powerful people either in your local municipality or your country or the world. Okay. I'm just wanting to play things a little bit safer in my dating life.
Yeah, I co-sign everything you just said.
Okay, is the tournament hosed without Cinderella's is one of the top questions. I think LA, you know, he's a tournament guy. He might ask this today.
Definitely. You know? He was soaking in the madness.
Nobody lower than an 11 seed. The theory now is that the NIL money has come in and the big schools now have so much cash and they can just buy up your players. So you can't go George Mason. You can't go VCU and keep a group of guys together that have been together since their high school days.
Agree.
You know, that's the story. Our guys have been playing together for 10 years. You have the most talented first round picks. We're going to whoop your ass with team basketball.
No question.
And it was brilliant. It happened for a long time.
Yeah.
Stephen A. Smith today saying, if this continues, it'll be the death of college basketball.
Yeah.
That far? You on that? You agree with him, Brian?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do. You know, and if you want to just make the tournament not 64 teams anymore and just make all the teams, we're starting to see it. When the SEC has 14 teams, what's that telling you? You know, I mean, it's
a little lopsided. It's 7 in the Sweet 16, by the way. Nice work there.
Absolutely nice work. Why? They're getting players from all over the country. They're getting them from the mid-majors.
It means more.
Yeah. So,
I mean, that's true, but we might be on a collision course for the best Sweet 16, Elite 8, Final Four that we've ever had. Like, let's see how the rest of the tournament plays out here. I just wish we could have gotten closer games down to the wire and not so many double-digit victories in the first two rounds.
What do we love, and I agree with you, Chief, but what do we love about the tournament?
Upsets and buzzer beaters.
What do we love? We love George Mason. We love St. Francis. We love
Saint
Gonzaga
Mary's.
Back in the day. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Gonzaga. Is that how you say it?
Zags.
Gonzaga.
The
but
Zogs.
See, I think there's a way to say it the right way. I think I probably said it. But we love that. We love the tournament the way it was, and we're not going to get that anymore.
It will be different, and I think it's a threat. I don't. It's not going to kill it, but it could make it less popular. Like if there's less upsets, yeah. I'm going in here as a fan of a mid major. We're going to get whacked.
We have so much fun with our brackets. We love to talk about 5-12. You know, we love that talk.
Well, TNT did announce it was the most watched day one ever.
Yeah.
Now day one was before. No upsets.
Right.
So exactly. We'll have to monitor next year's day one. Michigan State coach Tom Izzo now holds more NCAA wins than anybody else. Got some audio here. LA Live is brought to you by Greystone Roofing and Construction. That's greystone-roofing.com. He was asked about it. You know, you got to go back to 95 for his start as head coach at Michigan State. You got to go back to the days of Mateen Cleaves in 99 getting a national championship on a sprained ankle to encapsulate the tenure there of one Tom Izzo, maybe the greatest college basketball coach of our time.
Mm.
He was asked about it, had a great answer.
Well, Jim Bam's a friend too, and I think he's won a lot of games, man, and he's won a lot more games than I've won, thank God, in the tournament. I've been fortunate. But anytime you can accomplish something with your team and your coaches that some of the most respected guys in college basketball have achieved, I guess it's a privilege and an honor. But, you know, there's still – I say it on Bobby Knight's, and that was awesome. But I just never see any banners hanging for those kinds of things. And I'm a kind of a banner guy. So I until that happens.
Yeah, I'm kind of a banner guy. He does such a great job of not making it about him. And the players love that about him. But he's always giving credit to the players. But I think the reason he's a winner is just everything is about winning. And the guys that are truly like that and don't get distracted, they set themselves apart. They set records for most tournament wins, most Final Fours. And just a consistent ability to remake his squad regardless. I mean, we're in an NIL era. Guess what? Michigan State, you know, here we are back again. Yeah. Okay, for any LA Live gentlemen, I'm giving you a GD version of LA Live. We do need, what would you think of when you think of LA Live?
You need some crazy story from Florida. Somebody did something in Florida.
I can get close.
Okay.
We're going to Georgia.
Okay, here we go.
Georgia.
For a mug shot shorty.
Okay.
Oh, heck yes.
Look up the University of Georgia student whose mugshot went viral last week. Arrested again. This gal is a certified 9.5 at least out of 10. Maybe perfect 10. Okay, kind of a Dallas blonde look to her. Looks sophisticated too, like a lawyer or something. According to police records obtained by TMZ.
Whoa, crazy eyes, bro.
Yes.
Crazy eyes jumping off the screen.
You can see it. I know you Lily Stewart.
Lily.
She was busted by cops in Georgia early Sunday. The 20-year-old college student picked up by cops on charges of obstruction of law enforcement and loitering / prowling. What's this girl prowling for? Both are misdemeanor charges. She's still in jail, and her bail is set at $4,000. I mean, seriously, she could just ask somebody for $500. Well, she'd probably get it if she asked enough.
I got a report here. She was just released Sunday.
Okay.
$4,600. Dollars bail.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was bumped up $600. Maybe she got in a jail fight or something. But she was arrested and booked on a speeding in excess of maximum limits last week. Her attorney, Stephen Morris, says she got the speeding charge against Lily dropped. Good lawyer. Says he informed the prosecutor Lily was being targeted by online trolls. This girl's quite a piece of work.
Do you think she gets kicked out of the sorority now? Or they just welcome her back with open arms? Like, Lily, you're one of our idols.
I think she's getting kicked out. Now,
they probably
really want to get rid of a gal like this. She sounds like quite a force of nature.
What's the deal with Georgia as a school, man? I mean, with all the...
Something's in the water. But cops responded, I guess, the second infraction.
was cops responding to an intrusion alarm at the Georgia Student Center around 3 a.m. Sunday morning.
They found her at the football stadium.
And she was there with a couple other people inside the building. The building closes at midnight.
Okay.
So I guess they broke into the student center
for fun.
I don't know.
Let's go get some milkshakes.
I don't know.
I wonder what brought that on. What was the real reason for that? She's an Alpha Chi, so I don't really know the track record of that fraternity.
They say she wasn't drinking though.
Was not drinking.
I'm telling you, those crazy eyes.
So this is sober?
Those crazy eyes tell me she is not to be fooled with.
Yeah, you can see those eyes from a mile away. I mean, it's just sheer beauty, but then the eyes like locking onto the camera like, that's right, mofo.
Very scary.
She was hanging out. She hid behind the brick wall near Sanford Stadium is where she was.
Now, Brian, you mentioned Florida, and no edition of LA Live is complete without some coverage of a police story, and we go to Florida for that.
There we go.
Florida police chase video. Hillsborough Country broke out the chopper to track down a group of kids who stole a golf cart from a clubhouse. Yeah, five juveniles ran away from deputies after stealing a cart. Happened just after 11 within the Triple Creek community in Riverview. Deputies tried to pull them over, but all five of the juvies jumped from the cart as it was moving, started running away after several foot pursuits. They called out the chopper. And theft, no matter the item, is a violation of our community's sense of safety, was the justification. The sheriff, Chad Cronister, A-plus last name, Cronister, said in a statement.
Yeah. Wow, I'm looking at the chopper video right now. They got these dudes. I mean,
how fast is the golf cart going?
It looked like it was moving pretty good. It was a bigger one.
Was it one of these kind of like specialized carts? It wasn't just like a regular old golf cart, right?
No.
This, one of those suburban living.
Is it like a gator? Like a gator kind of?
It comes across more gator-like.
With a big motor and the big size, wheels.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably do 35 or so in those.
Those things run about 15 grand.
You can soup it up.
That's crazy that you bust out the chopper for something like that.
Yeah.
It feels like
they
were just itching, dude.
They had not used the chopper in 9 months. They were like, let's get this bird in the air.
Really they were afraid that maybe the government would cut the funding for the chopper so they had to get it up in there.
Living Grand Theft Auto situation for some high school kids.
Yeah, that's an all-time
story. At some point, you can look back and laugh at that, dude, right?
In high school, we stole a golf cart. The cops had to get the freaking chopper out to catch us. Okay, we got Rangers baseball coming up pregame at 6:30. Proper round tripper next, Chief?
Yes, new concession items at the Globe. Plus, we have Ron Washington doing a veteran move to the players next year in the nation.